take it out.
Oh, can you?
Yeah. Okay, do you remember where you were?
Yeah. So I have told everybody it's a haunted house, and I've told her that if she can spend the night in the house without seeing a ghost, that she can do what she wants, and if she sees a ghost, I'm to do what I want to do. So I'm going to make darn sure she sees a ghost tonight. And then he puts on the ghost robe. He's come on stage with a little suitcase. He takes out the ghost robe and puts it on for the audience to see who the ghost is. Now, we never did it that way. We would just come on cold turkey and say, well, I made a bet with my brother. I'm going to stay in this house tonight. And not any explanation at all. I'm just going to stay here. That I'm not afraid to stay here, but he says the place is haunted. And we never knew about this opening, see, and I think that opening is fantastic. All right, so then the straight comes on and says, well, my brother's made a very foolish bet. I'll bet he does what I want him to do tonight or something to that effect, you know, and sits down on the chair. And then Jake makes his entrance. And he, the way he makes his entrance, he don't knock, do you? You walk in.
Yeah,
Jake walks right in and asks a question. What do you ask?
Yeah. What time did the 3 o'clock train run?
Why, Jake, the 3 o'clock train runs at 2:60.
I thought it went past the depot.
And then he exits. And I say, well, that's mighty strange. What kind of a character is he? He doesn't look like a ghost, you know. And then sit down again, and he comes back in.
Lady, what time did you say that 3 o'clock train run?
That train runs on time.
It don't go on the track no more, huh?
Oh, Jake.
You know, I got to go tomorrow.
Well, that's great. You can go tomorrow. You don't have to go today because the train is gone.
No, I got to go tomorrow today, though.
I don't know what you're talking about, Jake. The train has gone. The 3 o'clock train has gone.
Yeah, I got my ticket, though. I got to go tomorrow today.
You've got your ticket to what?
To go tomorrow.
Oh, you want to go to the little town called Morrow, but you want to get there today.
Yeah,
oh,
that's it.
I see. Well, I'm very sorry, Jake, because the train that goes, you cannot go tomorrow if you want to go today, because the train that goes tomorrow is already on its way.
Yeah, well, I'll catch it when it goes around the bend.
I'm sorry, but the train has gone. The train is already gone, and you cannot catch it. I'll tell you what, Jake. Why don't we do this? I'm supposed to stay here tonight, and I'll be here all by myself, and I'm going to sit up all night.
Is the train gone?
The train is gone, Jake. You cannot catch the train. It's gone. Why don't you stay here with me tonight, and I'll give you breakfast in the morning, and you can catch the train tomorrow.
Yeah, we'll go have for breakfast.
Well, we want to go through that. That's a cute routine. All right, this belongs in another act, but we'll inject it. Well, I'll tell you what, if you stay all day tomorrow, I'll give you, let's see, breakfast in the morning, fried mush.
Mush?
Yeah, mush, fried mush. And then a little later, you don't like mush, remember? You say, I don't like mush too much, I'll wait for lunch.
Yeah, I don't like that mush business.
All right, well, you don't like fried mush. Well, all right, so for lunch, let's see, we'll have mush and milk.
Mush and milk?
Yeah, mush and milk for lunch.
Yeah, this sounds like a mushy job to me.
Well,
had the train gone?
The train has gone, Jake. You are stuck. You have
can't
to
catch
wait.
It, huh?
No, there's no way to catch the train. Now, then for supper, let's see, what did we have for lunch? Mush and milk for lunch. Oh, yeah, for supper we'll have milk and mush.
Milk and mush.
Yeah, change of program. Fried mush, mush and milk and mush.
It's been a long time. Let's
you
see.
Can't
I'm
remember?
Supposed to eat some apples and...
Yeah, wait a minute. Now, he says, I'll tell you what, just cancel the mush and milk and give me a barrel of apples for lunch, a bushel of dried apples for lunch, and a barrel of water for supper.
And a bus for supper.
That's right. We got it. We hadn't done that in a long time.
Okay, now say that like you were going to say that. Now, what would you
the barrel of, the bushel of apples would be breakfast.
Yeah, just give me, forget that mush business, and just give me a bushel of apples for breakfast. and a barrel of water for supper.
For dinner.
For dinner, and our bus for supper.
Yeah, that was it. And then he said it fast, you know, of course, we've forgotten a lot of. All right, now, Jake, sit down there. And he sits in a chair right beside me. Now, while you're sitting here, I just about tell you the story about this place.
Yeah, I noticed two of them when I come up.
Two what?
Two stories.
Oh, that's not the kind of story I'm talking about. There's a tail connected to this house.
A tail? I'll get to chop the tail off.
Oh,
then.
Not that kind of tail. I have to tell you a fable. There's a fable.
Is the train gone?
The train has gone, Jake. It left at 3:00. There's a fable connected with this that I know you'd like to hear about.
A stable in the house?
No, not a stable. I just will tell it to you. Now, just listen to this, Jake. Many years ago, an old miser lived in this house.
Yeah, we got one of them at our house, too.
You've got what at your house?
A miser.
Jake, you don't know what a miser is.
Oh, everybody knows what a miser is.
Of course they do, but do you know?
Yeah, miser. Let's see now, miser. Well, you know what a miser is, don't you?
Yes, I know.
Well, you know and I know what you're telling each other.
Jake, you don't know what a miser is.
A miser.
All right, what
a
is...
A miser man eats mice.
Oh,
rats,
no.
Cats,
no,
chickens,
no, something. No, Jake, nothing of the sort. No, a miser is a man who accumulates a lot of money, and he never spends a cent.
I'm going to be a miser when I get old.
How can you be a miser?
Because I never have a cent to spend.
Well, anyhow, this old miser lived in this house, and he used to sit in this chair. And he
hey, lady, is that train gone?
Jake, the train is gone. The miser used to sit in this chair, and he'd dump his gold on the floor. Had lots and lots of gold.
Let me look around here just a little bit right now. Wait a minute.
What are you doing, Jake?
That son of a gun might have dropped a nickel or two around here somewhere.
Oh, no way. No way. That was 100 years ago.
Oh, the interest be done eat up now.
Jake, this old miser would sit here and he'd count piece by piece over onto the other side of the floor. And then he would move over to the other chair. And then counted back and forth all night long. And one night, a midnight assassin climbed through that window over there.
You mean tell me midnight bologna sausage crept through that window down
no,
there?
No, Jake, not a sausage. An assassin, a killer.
I told you like sausages. I like sausages.
No, Jake, this is a killer, a man who kills people, a murderer. Ooh. And he came through that window over there. Now, we're sitting side by side, and Jake is looking over to his left, and I'm on his right. Excuse me. And I put my hand under his chin, and as I say this, I draw my hand back in the motion that would be used to cut his throat, you know. And I say he had a long dirk knife. And I
had a dirty knife, huh?
Indicate about 18 to 24 inches. A dirk knife. That means a knife that's curved, big, sharp knife. And he cut that old miser's throat from ear to ear. And I run my finger across his throat. What's the matter?
Did he bleed down there?
No, there's no blood there. Of course not, Jake. I haven't cut you. And he says, I thought my throat was cut from here way over yonder, you know. No, your throat is not cut. But anyway, the old man's head fell off. And it landed on the floor and it rolled under the chair you're sitting on.
Oh, Lord.
And he jumps up.
On his side over here. Let me over there.
All right, we changed chairs. All right, Jake, if that's what you want, it's all right. So it kept on rolling, and it rolled under the chair you're sitting on now, and that's where it stayed. And he jumps up and changes places again. All right, now they say that every night at the hour of 1, the ghost comes back. He jumps up and says, let me out of here.
Yeah, I got to go right now. I got to go.
Jake, you can't leave. You can't leave. It's almost time for the ghost to appear.
It's almost time for me to disappear, too.
Jake, you can't go out that door.
Why can't I go out that door?
Because if you bump into that skeleton out there, you'll break him all to pieces or he'll grab you.
No, I don't want Skelly gone out there. I'm going on the other side.
No. My big bulldog is tied out there. You can't go that way.
Well, I just cut my suspenders and go straight up then.
That won't work either. Sit down, Jake, and let's finish this.
The train gone?
The train left at 3:00 this afternoon. I told you, the train is gone.
Oh, We're done going.
All right, now, they tell me that if you sing a song, it'll keep the ghosts away.
Well, go ahead and sing, lady. You ought to have been singing all the time.
Well, all right, so now let's see. What shall we sing?
I know a good song.
All right, what is it?
Maggie and Jig's Baby Carriage.
Oh, I don't know how that one goes.
That don't go. You have to push it.
Oh, that's not going to do. We have to have
I know another good one.
What is it?
Give a Working Man His Pants.
Oh, that's an old Union song. Give a Working Man a Chance.
Yeah, a chance to get his pants.
Oh, Jake, for Pete's sake. No, I know the very one to sing, and that's The Old Jawbone.
Yeah, that's a good song, ain't it?
Yeah.
How does that go?
You don't know it? All right, I'll sing it for you. We sing it. Every night at the hour of one.
The ghost. Oh, Lord, what was that?
I think I know what that was. The wind was blowing out there and blew the shutters shut. And probably the gentle zephyrs blowing over the roof.
Well, I'll get a stick and run them gentle heifers off of this roof.
Oh, Jake, not a heifer. Let's start singing. Every night at the hour of one, a figure appears and it strikes you down.
Grab you, oh, Lord, what was that?
I know what that was.
What was that?
That was my little bitty kitty cat coming down the stairs.
Your little kitty cat?
Yeah.
That sounds like a Thomas John Henry cat with horseshoes on.
All right, Jake, let's sing because the ghost is supposed to be here any minute now. Every night at the hour of one, a ghost appears and he strikes you down. He grabs you by the hair of the head and drags you around till you're almost dead.
Ooh, what was that? What was that?
I just figured out what it was, Jake. I saw you tapping your foot while you were singing, and that is the echo.
A hooko?
That's an echo.
What's a hooko?
Don't you know what an echo is?
Sure, I know. What is it?
An echo is when you make a loud noise of some kind. The sound waves travel away from you. They hit something solid like the side of a building or a wall, and they bounce back at you.
They bounce right back at you, huh?
Right. Let me demonstrate. And then I lean off stage and I call out like I'm calling out the door. Hello, Liverpool. And the echo says, hello, Liverpool.
Hey, will that thing do that for me?
Yeah, the echo will do that for you.
Hello, Liverpool.
Hello, you crazy fool.
Yeah, listen here, lady. That thing called me a fool like that.
No, you just didn't hear it right.
Was that the hooko?
That was the echo.
He didn't call me no fool?
No, of course. Let's try another one. Hello, are you on the level? Hello, are you on the level?
Yeah, will the thing do that for me, too?
Why, certainly.
Hello, are you on the level?
Hello, you crazy devil.
Let that thing call me devil that time. I know that thing is.
No,
that
let's do it a little different, Jake. Let's see if we can do this. We'll do it with a hand clapping. Let's see how that works. Now, you just listen. When I clap my hands one time, the echo will come back one time. Listen. You hear that? That was the echo.
You heard that hooko?
Yeah.
Yeah, the hooko.
That's the echo. That's the echo. Now, watch.
It sure did. You sure that hooko will do that for me?
That's the echo, right?
I'm going to try it now.
Okay, let's
see
you
do that for me.
Yeah. Huh?
He did, didn't he?
Yep.
I'm going to fool that hooko.
Oh, you can't fool an echo.
Yeah, I can fool a hooko.
There's no way to fool an echo.
I'm sure going to fool that hooko.
Then his hands pass each other and the echo answers.
I done it.
Oh, Jake, that's not an echo. You can't fool an echo. That's got to be the ghost.
Is that what that was?
Let's start singing.
Let's get out of here.
Let's sing the chorus of that song. Oh, the old jawbone was hanging on the wall, hanging on the wall, hanging on the wall. And then the ghost comes in between and slaps me on the face. And I jump up and I start shouting at him, Jake, what is the meaning of this? I offered to give you breakfast in the morning. Jake, what is the meaning of this?
Hanging on the wall.
Jake, what do you mean by slapping me like that?
What did you quit singing for?
Because you slapped me, that's why.
I ain't slapped you. I've been singing there to keep them.
You slapped me, and I don't like that, and I'm not going to put up with that kind of foolishness.
I ain't slapping nobody. I've been singing to keep the goats out of here.
Just see to it you don't do anything like that again.
All right.
Oh, the old jawbone was
hanging on the wall.
And the ghost comes in and slaps him.
Now listen here, lady.
Oh, the old jawbone.
I sang it over here, and you haul off and hit me like that.
What's the matter with
you, Jake? Hit me right upside the head, right there.
What are you talking about?
I just looking right out that eye, and I seen you.
Jake, have you completely... Oh, come on.
I'm looking right at you. You just haul off, hit me right there.
Oh, for heaven's sake. I haven't done anything of the kind. We better sing.
Yeah,
it's 1 o'clock exactly right now.
Yeah,
heavens to Betsy.
Oh,
the old jawbone was hanging on the wall, and then the ghost strikes both of us, and then we get up, and then we're arguing with each other.
I
will not stand for this kind of foolishness. I'm not going to have anything like that ever again. If you do that again, I don't want it.
And you haul off and hit me right upside the head right there.
Did something hit you?
Something? You hit me upside the head. That's what you
done. I didn't touch you, Jake, and something hit me.
I ain't hit you.
This is terrible.
You hit me.
No, sir. I haven't touched you, Jake. And you say something hit you, and I know something hit me. Well, it must have been the ghost.
Must have been.
Oh, we better start singing. Oh, the old jawbone was hanging on the wall. And then the ghost comes in, taps me on the shoulder. He continues to sing.
The
ghost sits down beside him. And then the funniest part is when the old professionals did it, the ghost would be sitting there and then Jake would say, the one funniest one I ever saw was a black man doing blackface. And he says, we ain't going to sing no more, lady. He says, do you mind if I tell you about my gal? He says, I went to see my gal the other night, and she was sitting on the couch, and I sat down beside her. And I said, honey, do you mind if I put my leg over here? And he put his leg in her lap, see. And she says, uh-uh. And he says, do you mind if I put my other leg over here? And she says, uh-uh, that's all right. And he says, can I put my arm around your neck? You know, and he puts his arm around her neck. Can I put my other arm around your neck? And she said, uh-huh. And he says, then I said, honey, can I have a kiss? And he turns to the ghost. He's going to ask for a kiss. And the ghost is looking him right in the face. And then the comedy of the mugging. And he says, Mr. Ghost, is it all right if I take this leg off? You know, is it all right if I take this leg off? Can I take this arm down? Can I, you know, it's dragged out. And then finally he stands up, and when he stands up, the ghost stands up. And he sits back down real slow. Then he stands up quick, and the ghost stands up quick with him. And then he sits down quick, and the ghost sits down quick with him. And then he stands up again, and he says, I'm Georgia.
Georgia Reed, but I'm Alabama Bam.
And he takes off, and the ghost jumps on his back and rides off. This was very acrobatic because, you know, you had to be strong enough to hold the guy when he lit on you. But that's a farce. I mean, that was the first act that we always put on every week because it was the one they expected. The people knew that act just like you know the Three Bears and Goldilocks, and they loved it. But the young people have
like
never
that.
Seen it.
That's
all new again.
One act, you know. But different each night for a couple of weeks in the place, and then you have to do other acts besides that.
That's a wonderful act, though. And you say there are lots of different versions of it?
Well, I gave you the Burt Russell opening, and I explained that our opening didn't do all that. We just had the straight walk on, because the reason for this was on my dad's show, when my stepmother came on, she was a non-pro, and so I did the straight. And my father did the black, and then I think my brother did the ghost, and he didn't want to be on stage, but with the ghost robe or something like that, he didn't mind so much. As he's gotten older, he's changed, but he had two extremely traumatic experiences when he was a child. He was 3 years my junior, and my mother, when we were on the vaudeville review, my mother made him a clown suit, and put him in front of the mirror, and he saw himself, and he got hysterical. She had to take him away from the mirror. He was laughing at himself so much. He apparently didn't know it was him himself, you know. So he had, when he was little, he used to lay down in the ropes in the back in the wings and go to sleep. And the chorus girls would come through and pick him up because he was so cute, and he'd have lip prints all over his face and kissed him, you know. And so he was sleeping in the ropes with a clown outfit on the night she wanted him to go on stage for the first time. I had made my debut at the age of three, so I suppose she thought he should make his debut at the age of three. And he was dressed up real cute, and I was out in the audience and didn't know this was coming off. I had no idea anything like this was going to happen. If he was three, I was seven, and I remember it as vividly as if it happened day before yesterday. So I'm sitting sort of back in the middle of the audience and watching, and the vaudeville is all over, and the movie is coming on. And, of course, the theater's gone dark. The screen is all lit up with the title of the movie. And then all of a sudden, the movie went off, and a spotlight came on because Mama picked him up dead asleep and shoved him out on the stage just as the title came on. And the guy in the booth saw this action on stage, turned the lights off and spotted whatever it was walking on stage, you know, because he knew it was something that was planned that he didn't know about. And Bubs walked out to the middle of the stage half asleep and staggered. See, now this is funny as hell. He's a little clown, pardon my French. And he's a little clown and he's staggering like he's drunk, you know, and they thought that was the act. And he gets out in the middle of the stage and he's mugging because he's trying to wake up with that bright light in his eyes, you know. He don't know where he's at. He's lost. And the audience let out a roar. It was a screamingly funny thing, you know. It really was. I even laughed. And he woke up and he realized where he was and zip, he was off the other side. And the audience continued to laugh after the film came on for at least 5 minutes. Well, this was a terrible experience for a little three-year-old. But she didn't expect that to happen, you know. That wasn't planned. All right, so he kind of got over that a little bit. We talked him out of it and all. Then when I was 12 or 13 and he was 9 or 10, my mother and I had a nice little dance routine as a sister act because I was a big kid for my age. We had two costumes that were almost identical and we danced together. And she decided it would be cuter if she had three sisters in the act. So she dressed him up like a little girl, and he was the cutest little girl you ever saw in your life. She knew how to put the makeup on, you know, and she had a blonde wig and everything. Made him a costume, the whole bit. At the last minute, she realized she had forgotten the shoes, and all he had was a pair of broken. And here we went kicking our feet up daintily, and while he was clodhopping across on the stage. And it was in a Pennsylvania Dutch neighborhood, and those people screamed and laughed and laughed, and poor Bubs went off. He said, I'll never go on stage again. And I don't think he ever did until he was an adult. And after he did go on, as an adult, it was to play the guitar, not to make any motions or anything. And if Daddy even looked at him, he scowled at Daddy because he was afraid he was going to make him say something, and he was afraid he'd be laughed at again. And, you know, Bubs is really a very witty person, and it's a tragedy. You know, it was really something that should not have been lost. Because he can be, you've seen musicians playing a guitar, do funny things to the guitar, you know, that absolutely you crack up just watching them or listening to them. And he's that kind of a guy in a party, but he'll not do any of that stuff on stage. It's out of the question. Yes. They've laughed at him twice, and that's enough. Yeah. He was trying to be serious both times, and it, of course, the first time was an accident.
Well, in your vaudeville days, what was the difference between vaudeville and the traveling shows?
Not a whole heck of a lot. The biggest difference between the medicine show and vaudeville was that the medicine lectures were interspersed between the vaudeville. And the acts had to be somewhat shorter on the medicine show to compensate for the time that was needed in between the acts. Like, for instance, our program usually started out with Daddy doing the ventriloquism, and then he'd go into his tonic lecture because he had to be dignified in order to do the tonic lecture. Then after we sold the tonic, I would come on with the ukulele. This is after I was 12, 13, 15 years old, I would do the ukulele and my drawing act or both. And he would be blacking up and changing into his costume. Now, at one time, for a short period of time, he thought it would be interesting to the audience if he blacked up and changed on stage, which meant he just put these of the costume over top of his business suit. And that went over real big, and he liked it, and the audiences liked it. So he did it maybe the second or third night. From then on, he would do it. He would be talking to them, telling them this is burnt cork, you know, that this is theatrical burnt cork, and you just put a little bit of water with it, and you do this and that and this and that, and then you put on a wig, and then you put on the pants, and, you know, and then by the time he got through, he's in his dialect, you know. He was talking altogether different, and they loved it. But anyhow, we would do the ventriloquism, the medicine lecture, and then I would come on with one or two acts, and then he would come on, and we would do a double. In other words, we actually, when I was playing the ukulele, we finally had got it down to where we were sort of not really dancing, but keeping in time together. And incidentally, back then, it wasn't polite for a black to be on stage with a Caucasian lady. And he would take his wig off to show that little white above where the wig didn't, where the black didn't reach the wig. That made it legitimate that he was really white and black. Isn't that silly? It's wild, ain't it? And well, we had to do that. Uh-huh. And then after the double, we would do what we called a bit, where either Jake gets something off on the straight or the straight gets something off on Jake. Now, in the numbers bit and in the sucker bit, those were the only two that I know of that Jake really got something off on everybody else. In the rest of the bits, they were all pulling a joke on Jake. And then each one of these would be interspersed with a medicine lecture, like the dummy, then the tonic, then my act, and then the liniment, and then Daddy and Me Together, and then the salve, and then the bit, and then the candy sale, and then the afterpiece. And by the time we got done, we'd be about 2 hours with the whole show. And we put our little medicine show on at the Eastern Stars here every January.
And will you be doing that again this January?
Yeah, definitely. I don't have the exact date yet. I'm going to have to let you know.
Would you mind if we tape recorded that?
I'd be delighted. I've been wanting somebody to...
you'd really have something.
I've been wanting a Betamax of it, you know, wanting somebody to really do a Betamax.
Be wonderful.
Yeah. Anyway, the way that started is a good story. The Eastern Stars, I was an officer at the time. I had to wear my white dress and everything, you know. And so I'm sitting there in one of those chairs, and the women got up, and they wanted to raise some money. And they said, we can't have a dinner. We have to have a dinner because so-and-so is having a bazaar, and so-and-so is having something else. And they try to cooperate in all of the different units to see if they can have something different so they get good crowds. And they said, we've given so many dinners. Has anybody got an idea for something different to do? And this is something I'd been wanting to do. When we bought this place, I told Bob, let's put a medicine show platform up on the end of the property. And one night out of every week, from now on, let's put on a free show. Let these people know what we are and who we are. Just put the show on. If we sell candy or something fine, you know, just put the show on. He says, that stuff is dead. Forget it. Sure, it's dead. It's so darn dead that it's brand new again. You know, people haven't seen it in this generation, and he just couldn't believe this. And so I said, well, all right. This is an idea that I really think would have worked even now if we'd have put that show on. One night out of every week, this whole town of Tarpon Springs would have been out here standing on our... We'd have had cars all up and down the highway. It might have been a headache, but it might have been worth it. Anyway, I stood up that night at the Eastern Stars when they were trying to figure out something to do, and I said, I was raised in show business, and I can produce a show. But I've got to have help. I need about 4 or 5 women to help me. I said, my husband is a wonderful comedian, and I do the straights, and all we need is a little backup. And if you'd like to do that, we can charge an admission and have a good fundraising project. And I could see everybody sort of looking at each other doubtfully, you know, like, oh boy, put on a show and it's a flop, would be the laughing stock of the neighborhood and all that sort of thing. You could just see it, you know. And I can't blame them, you know, they had to be careful. So they talked about a dinner and everything, and And I just took the background. I said, all right, they don't want it. Okay, let it go. So another year goes by, and they get up and want to find something new to do again, you know. So I remembered the story of the king and the spider web, you know, and the seven times the spider won out on the seventh attempt. And I said, I don't think I want to go seven times. I'm going to try one more time anyhow. So I stood up and I said, I offered you guys this thing last year. And I said, I know I can make a success of it. I hadn't told him anything, you know. I assumed he'd be delighted to help. And they still gave that funny look to each other. And I thought, oh, the heck with it. And I sat down again. And a lady who has since passed away of cancer, a very fine lady, Evelyn Innett, stood up and she said, May offered to do this once before. And I'm all for giving her a chance to see what she can do. And another good friend of mine, little Thelma, stood up and said, well, why don't we give the dinner and then give the show after the dinner? And I stood back up. I said, I appreciate the opportunity, and I'll be delighted to do it any way you want to do it. However, if you put the dinner on first, you're going to come to me after the show and say, I wish we hadn't spent all that money on that food. So you're going to make more money if you don't put the food on. Oh, no, that'll be the safe way to do it. They still didn't have the confidence. So I thought, all right, I got my toe in the door. I should be thankful I've got that much, you know. Guess what the first thing is they said to me after the show? Exactly. But I come home that night, and I said, Bob, guess what? We're going to put a medicine show on at the Eastern Star. Who is? I said, you and me. Not me. I ain't going to do it. I said, Bob, you can't let me down. I've told those women we're going to put the show on. He said, that stuff died a long time ago, and I'm not going to make a laughing stock of myself. I said, Bob, it's so old, it's new again. I couldn't convince him. So I got real mean. I said, you ain't going to see the show. I ain't even going to let you see the show because I'm going to have to do the comedy, and I don't want you to laugh at me for the rest of my life. I had seen my dad and Bob do it, so I knew it, you know, there's no problem. But I had to get me a straight that could feed the lines to me. So I got the daughter to do that, and I worked on her night and day. And she did a fantastic job for somebody that's never done it before. So along towards the time they'd go on the stage, I said,